We are live. What's going on, fellas? What's going on, folks? Welcome to episode number 13 of the Nuclear Golf Podcast. A few things to get into tonight. We're going to obviously recap a little bit of the Charles Schwab Challenge. We're also going to tee up the Memorial this week. Angel Cabrera went back-to-back in senior major wins. First two senior major wins of his career, actually. Won both of them within 6 days, which is pretty crazy. We're also going to get into this crazy Tommy Fleetwood putt, which definitely seemed like it hung on the edge for longer than 8 seconds. Seemed like it was more like 25 to 30. My name's John. I'm the co-owner of Nuclear Golf and TW Legion, and I'm joined tonight by Hutch Bennett and Joey from Scheffler Fans. Joey's also our behind-the-scenes producer. We're a little bit short-staffed tonight on the pod, so we're just going to roll with us three. Fellas, how are you guys doing? Hutch, Joey, what's going on?
Somewhere Tim is fighting internet troubles, I'm sure.
Even when Tim's not on, he's probably fighting the barbecue with the Wi-Fi. So
it's been a struggle for Tim. What's been up with you? Not too much. Just, you know, work, busy, keeping up with golf a little bit here and there. Memorial this week, so it's a signature event this week. We're gonna chat a little bit about that, preview some of the field and the storylines heading into the week. But before we get into it, I guess we'll talk a little bit about the Charles Schwab over the weekend. I'm not sure if you guys had a chance to watch much or not. Ben Griffin got his second career PGA Tour win. It's also his second win of the season. He also he won by a shot over Matty Schmidt of Germany. Shot one over yesterday on Sunday. After five holes, he actually had a five-shot lead, but that evaporated coming home into the late stages. Schmidt actually chipped in on 18. I'm not sure if you guys had a chance to see, but Griffin actually had to make a four-footer to secure the win.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of it. It's crazy for him, though, right? Because, like, his other win was, what, the Zurich, right?
Right, with Novak.
So, I mean, just a great little run here for him. I'm sure he's made a ton of money, got himself into some big events. I'm glad in a way that he kind of gave away that lead, made it a little more interesting down the stretch. The chip in was crazy. There was a lot of little crazy, like, semi-viral moments from the tournament, it looked like, this week, which was, I guess, exactly what the tour needed for a tournament like that, that didn't have a ton of star power or fanfare kind of wedged in between the PGA and the signature event, the Memorial, this week. So good for them.
Yeah, I mean, Joey, did you have a chance to see Scheffler? Because he entered Saturday like 10 shots back. I think he shot 7 under on Saturday, was it? And then, you know, he had a look coming in, but he was 6 back heading into Sunday as well, right? So he was a little bit off his game this week, coming off the win, obviously, at the PGA. I mean, understandably so. He said his preparation going in was pretty light. I mean, still ended up literally finishing, what, he had like a T5?
T4? Yeah, sneakiest T5 I've seen from him in a while. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
T5 guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Saturday, I think he was like 7 under, or no, I think 6 under on the front nine, and then got all the way to 8 under, and then just kind of couldn't keep it together on the back nine. But again, sneaky top five, like he's fine. We'll figure out what the back thing is. You know, he's winced a couple times, kind of seen him catch a little bit of a strain in his back, maybe pinch a little nerve. He downplayed it. That's also Scotty. He doesn't really show any emotion no matter what. So we'll keep an eye on that. And Memorial is definitely one of those tournaments that, you know, Muirfield's going to punish you if you're not good off the tee. So I'm hoping that kind of is ironed out for the week, and we'll just keep a close eye on it. But
yeah, another story going into another. Oh, Hutch, just a sec. I just wanted to say something about Ricky Fowler, because going into Sunday, Ricky Fowler was a bit of a storyline. He kept it up all week, actually, and he was 4 back going into the final round. I mean, people were wondering if maybe he would kind of go on a little bit of a run there, especially with some of the inexperienced guys towards the top of the board. But didn't pan out for him. shot 74 on race, four over par. Is that four over? I think it was four over par. It was another disappointing. I mean, to finish T16 with where he was heading in, it's pretty tough scene for Fowler. Hutch, yeah. Sorry, I mean to cut you off.
Par 70, so.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say to Joey, as Joey, you know, John and I being the Tiger guys that we are, I guess John's the head Tiger guy, though. Anytime we see a wince after a swing, it just sends chills down our spine. Like we flash back to all the bad things that have happened over the years. But I think you're more right. He probably just pulled something, pinched something. It's probably not a disc issue like Tiger was having, but I could see how he could pull something with as much moving as he's doing in his swing, getting all over the place, dancing around like that.
But it also did feel
Ricky point. That's good for him.
The video that came out, it looked like he did swing overly aggressive like that. Just looked like he was trying to reach a little bit long. Ted Scott didn't look worried. Scotty didn't look worried. So, you know, until it becomes a reasonable doubt, I'm not stressing about it.
Absolutely.
A little bit extra movement in that swing.
But before we segue into the Will Zalatoris back situation, which is kind of a perfect little segue over to that, because that's news as of today. Zalatoris issued a statement saying he's undergone back surgery and he re-herniated two discs and he won't be returning until the fall. Just a quick little recap of Ben Griffin. This season, he has two wins, Zurich and then Charles Schwab. Six top tens. He was T8 at the PGA, and he's now up to fifth in the FedEx Cup standings. This guy has quite a story, courtesy of Jeff Eisenband. In 2021, Ben Griffin was experiencing financial strains and burnout trying to make it in pro golf. He stepped away to become a mortgage loan officer. After a few months in the office, he came back to golf. Now he's a PGA Tour winner. Pretty crazy story. This guy, I think I saw something about how much debt he was in as well a few years back. And then now, obviously, to be a two-time winner this season is quite a comeback story. So I'm happy for Ben Griffin. I mean, not the most flashy of names for sure, but it's a cool story and he got it done. So
just never know when it's going to click for some of these guys, right? Like it just takes one little thing to go and. As you mentioned, like with some of his results this year, he seems to have been trending in the right direction anyway. And then to break through at the Zurich gets him in the winner's circle. And then here we are, right? Like, so great deal for him. The two top fives prior to this, I think he was T4 two straight weeks, I believe, like Mexico and Cognizant, like you said. So, sometimes it just takes that to get going in the right direction. Maybe he's somebody who can make some waves coming up, because he's certainly going to be in bigger events now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's also improved his ranking pretty significantly in the Ryder Cup standings. He's only 12 points back of who is he back? He's only 12 points back of Patrick Cantlay for the 12th position. Patrick Cantlay is, you know, it's crazy, but he hasn't won since the BMW Championship in 2022. Mm-hmm. So we're going on 3 years this summer for no wins for Patrick Cantlay, which is a pretty extended period of time for a guy of his caliber.
Is he in the field this week?
Yeah, it's a signature event. Like most of the guys are in the field.
Okay. I know there's a couple people got exemptions. So keep an eye on him. He played well. He won the Memorial in 2021, I think, playoff against Colin Morikawa.
Right.
So. It's a place that he likes to play well. So, I mean, if he's going to get back on the saddle, it's not a bad place. But, yeah, looking at Ben Griffin.
Cantlay's got, like, the fifth best odds this week. So, I mean, he's certainly a favorite of those who partake in that kind of thing. And I mean, you can't get up there without being a player, right? He's an absolute player. And like you said, he's shown success at Muirfield before. So, as Tiger taught us, experience around there matters.
Let's touch a little bit about Will Zalatoris. It's kind of the story of the day here today. This morning, he announced that he's undergone back surgery, re-herniated two discs. Here's the statement. This spring, I started feeling some discomfort and instability in my back that progressively got worse. Following the PGA, an MRI showed that I had re-herniated two discs. After discussing the options with my medical team, I underwent surgery last Friday with Dr. Michael Duffy at the Texas Back Institute. Like, folks, this guy 28 years old. Mm-hmm. This is the second back surgery that he's had. I believe his first surgery was a microdiscectomy. Previously, he withdrew from the 2022 FedEx Cup playoffs. At that point, he was actually leading. He was leading the FedEx Cup standings at that time. He was also top 10 in the world at that time. Fast forward through to 2023, he withdrew prior to the start of the Masters, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then that's when he had surgery, right? So he was out. And then coming into the 2025 season, he was excited about his prospects. He said he had put on like 15 pounds of muscle, I think, in the off season. He was looking forward to having a big year. But I mean, it's just so difficult to hear a guy like this, such a high caliber player, to be so young and have this many surgeries at this age. Like this is stuff that like Tiger dealt with like in his 40s, but Will Zalatoris is a young guy, and it's just very difficult to kind of see and hear his struggle here. What do you guys think about this? Is Zalatoris kind of in trouble career-wise, or do you think he's going to be able to figure it out? He's got a long road to recovery ahead.
It's certainly concerning, right? Like, John, I mean, and Joey definitely has paid attention too, but probably you and I have been more tapped into back troubles than we'd ever care to know about. But, you know, it's kind of that old saying that we've heard a thousand times. It's when you start having back surgeries, like, it's hard to stop. And he's just kind of at that point right now. Golf is not easy on your lower back. Clearly it's having some trouble for him, and you just hate to see it, because we saw it for years with Tiger. Like you said, he was in his 40s. You have to be concerned about his future long term, right? Like, it's totally natural to wonder if this is an inflection point for him. But you're hopeful that with his youth, maybe he can come back from it. Is Sean Foley his coach? Because that's who I blame exclusively for Tiger's problems. I don't think he's his coach, but the swings don't look similar. But I absolutely hate it for the kid, right? Like, because he was, like you said, he was on such a crazy path, like just to superstardom, right? Like, he was contending in all these big tournaments and a big name. And now it's just kind of, he's lost a couple years now to the back, and looks like we're going to lose a few more months to it at the very least.
Yeah. I mean, I've slipped a disc before. I wouldn't wish that pain on anybody, let alone someone that's, you know, wealth depends on their ability to do anything actively. So yeah, it is a shame. I mean, getting snatched from the top of your game, playing just about as well as you can, Hutch, you're right. I think at a young age, maybe there's a chance that with the correct, I mean, I would have liked to have seen maybe more steps taken at that moment and really make sure he's healthy, because now it just seems like it's no matter what they do, he just keeps re-agitating it. So obviously for him and for everybody else and just for the game in general, you hope that he can figure something out, because you're right. I mean, obviously him being young helps, but that kind of stuff, we've seen it absolutely just destroy people's careers.
He was top 10 in the world, like I said. I mean, if you go back to like 2021, 2022, like in 2022, he had three top six finishes in the majors, which is wild.
Yeah.
He was killing it.
Dude was a player. I mean, he was legit one of those guys that every single time there was a big tournament, you had to think of, hey, he's a contender. He might win this every single time that year. It was wild.
Yeah, and then like, yeah, he was up there, like he was in the same conversations as like the Colin Morikawas and, you know, these elite young guys, up and coming guys. This year his best finish was a T12 at the Amex. I mean, most of his other finishes have kind of been mid, you know, T30, T48, T26, T54, T54, T47, like T30 at the Players. He was T22 at the API, but, you know, miscut at the Masters, miscut at the PGA. There was a few videos of swings where he was grabbing his back as well. Like as recent as the PGA and at Augusta as well. So it's been a tough go for Will Zalatoris, and hopefully his rehab goes well and he's able to swing pain free when he returns. But, yeah, it's, it's not good to see, just, for sure.
It's crazy to see, like, and to think too, like, as advanced as we are in certain surgeries and things like that, that the back is still something that we can't seem to get totally right for people who play golf. Right. And I guess it's got to be the game, right? That's just gives you such a beating on your lower back because it's so repetitive and twisting and all that good stuff. So I don't know. You just hope for the kid that he can come back. He's one of those guys that whenever I get into live arguments with people and they say, you know, that they don't need the money, blah, blah, blah. He's one of those guys that I would point to and say I don't know if he was offered the money, but he should have taken it. If
he was offered the money. He was offered the money. He reportedly turned down like somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million.
And it just goes to show, like, you never know what's going to happen, right? Because he's lost a lot of time and a lot of golf since that. And yeah. I hate that he's having to go through it. Honestly, I just hate it.
Absolutely.
Reminds me a little bit of the Daniel Berger situation. It's obviously a little similar. Mm-hmm. Well, he was definitely at a higher point in his game, but it just sucks to see someone just incapable of being able to do anything about it.
Yeah. Berger was a wrist, right?
I thought it was his lower back.
Berger. Can't remember what. I thought he had a couple injuries.
Yeah, he may have had both. He may be one of those guys that had both of those going on. I'll look it up while we.
He came back earlier last year.
Yeah, he did come back. He did have a comeback for sure. The Tommy Fleetwood putt on 18 yesterday. I'm not sure if you guys got the stopwatch out, but it seemed like the rule is apparently you have 8 seconds from the time that your ball comes to rest after hitting the putt, right? But if you count it, it was more like 25 to 30 seconds. Like, it wasn't even close to the time allotment that you're supposed to have. So that's why or am I missing something there?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that I think this happened with Spieth and somebody a couple years back where it's, you know, until your ball comes to rest. But if both players look at it and they're like, it looks like it's moving. Mm. That's always been kind of a gray area that I've seen. So I couldn't tell if they were just waiting for it to, you know, they saw Dimple move and they were like, it's going. Cause it did, obviously. So, obviously if it's not a matter of contention between both players, if someone's disagreeing in the group, but, to me, it didn't look like that was the case. So
I guess what happens is you walk to your ball and then once you arrive at your ball, then you have 10 seconds. But he took a long time to actually walk to his ball. Right.
Is that like the cheat code? Can you do that then? Like, can you just wait to address it?
Apparently, you can. If they're not going to penalize people for slow play, they shouldn't penalize them for slow walking either.
It's fair.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, until there's a way to police it, then take every advantage you can get. Why not?
It is certainly a gray area. I mean, the PGA Tour says you have reasonable time, and then obviously the other players were looking at it as well, wondering if it's going to drop or not. I mean, we did a very unscientific poll on the pod account, which said 60% of you said that it should have counted. Just a few hundred votes, so not a huge sample size. But we posted this video, and it had a ton of comments, like 2.5 million views on it. So people definitely were voicing their opinions online about whether they thought it should have counted or not. Whether you agree or don't agree, it's a gray area, like we said. It wasn't necessarily like a consequential moment because he was still several shots back of the lead at that point. So it's not like it was going to determine if he would be like tied for the lead or winning the tournament or something like that. But it does set like a precedent for future things like this. We're not going to be expecting a one-shot penalty or anything like that if this happens going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I know most of the people that are voting, like, if that's happening on your local course and you look at it and you're like, it's moving. Now, obviously, it's different. Obviously, you're held to a higher standard playing professionally, but, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it until you actually find some sort of way to get it out of that gray area. you're kind of stuck there because it's okay. Well, I might take a lap around the entire green just to go around everyone's line to then go to it slowly with my shadow in the line. Like you could, you know, if it gets to the point where like everyone's like, okay, you took too long, but for now use it, I guess. I don't know what else I would advise them to do.
Yeah, I guess the other kind of thing with all this is like the betting side of things, right? You know, people are betting on scores, you know, things like that. So, I mean, in that case, it is consequential when you're making a birdie or you're not making a birdie. They're finishing the tournament as well.
Yeah, for money in the tournament.
Yeah, it matters in that sense, right? One guy commented, this isn't Chris Riley on Twitter commented, this isn't allowed. It's very sad that he got his hopes up too when it finally dropped. 12 stroke penalty.
What was his comment? One stroke for every second that it's on the lib.
Yeah.
Hey, before we go anywhere else, I looked it up, Joey. Berger did lose a significant amount of time to a wrist injury, but it was longer to the back. He had back problems too. It was like 18 months. But he, from what I saw, he didn't look like he had surgery on his back. So who knows? Back is a weird thing.
Memorial tournament this week. Definitely one of the best weeks of the year at Muirfield Village. Jack Nicklaus is the host. It's a great event. One interesting note going into this week was Rory McIlroy deciding that he won't be teeing it up at the Memorial. His next start will apparently be at the Canadian Open, which is the week before the U.S. Open. Just wanted to get your guys' quick thoughts on that. Obviously, Rory's committed to a more global schedule. Just this week, we learned that he'll be playing in India for the first time coming this October. He is also committed to 2 years. He'll be playing back-to-back years in Australia for the first time in, I believe, 11 years. Events being played at Royal Melbourne this year. So that's going to be an exciting watch for fans down under. But Rory is skipping a signature event this week, Jack Nicklaus's tournament. Do you guys think this is okay? He's just kind of managing his schedule, because if you go back to, if you guys remember that kind of Delaware meeting with some of the top PGA Tour players when they were forming a plan to kind of combat LIV at the time. Tiger was there, Ricky was there, Rory was there, Cantlay, a bunch of those, Spieth, you know, all the big guns. What they kind of decided upon was that players would be required to play signature events certain weeks. What are your guys' thoughts, Joey?
That's my biggest issue with it. Like, if you go so long taking these stances, if he's got reasons to not play, whether it's, you know, injury or he wants to get ready for the U.S. Open, that's fine. But like, you know, just kind of randomly hopping out of a signature event when you spend all this time griping about playing the signature events and, you know, not taking advantage of what the LIV guys don't have. So again, I guess we don't have all the information on that. Would love to learn a little bit more as to why his team had that decision or what was his mindset or process behind that. But I think it would have sharpened him up well. I think, again, it's going to give you a little bit preview to what you're going to see at the U.S. Open with tighter fairways and super long rough. So if he's going towards a more global scale, and I don't see where that really connects to sitting this one out, whether it's just workload, but, you know, I guess that's the choice. So
yeah. I think we've seen, too, that they're not like – the tour has not been like overly – it feels to me like at this point that – requirement to play signature events is more like a, not like a requirement, but more like a suggestion. Cause you've seen a lot of guys skip these events. Like Scotty just skips. Which one did we just have that he didn't play in?
The Truist, was it?
Yeah.
Didn't play it at Truist. So like it's clearly not like a quote unquote requirement, or maybe you get a certain amount of exemptions or certain ones you're allowed to miss or whatever. And I feel like, too, didn't Rory have a few years ago when he skipped his tournament, didn't he catch a lot of grief for skipping Jack's tournament?
Who?
Rory skipping this one.
Oh, like, I mean.
He skipped this before.
Oh, did he skip this one before? Yeah, I mean,
pretty sure he has, because it used to. And be, I'm not, it used to just be a big thing. They almost treated it like the press almost treated it like a slap in the face personally if you didn't play Jack or Arnold Palmer's tournaments. So like it's just weird to me. And then when Arnie died, like a lot of people started skipping the API. But so you clearly saw there was some respect factor there. But I don't know. It's I guess he's certainly got certain commitments that he has to keep up. He's doing more of a global schedule, like you say, going to India, and then we're going to Australia. I don't see a huge deal in skipping this. It's a big event. There's going to be certainly a lot of big names there. So it's not like he was going to carry the tournament, right? Like it's obviously it'd be cool to see him, but there's still plenty of great players that are going to be playing this week.
Yeah. Bob Herrig actually reported a little bit about it for Sports Illustrated. Rory had told, or it was reported by James Corgan of The Telegraph at the start of the season that Rory would be skipping a few tournaments as he trimmed down his schedule this year. The expected tournaments that he wasn't going to play was the Cognizant, the Valero, the Texas Open, RBC Heritage, and maybe even a FedEx Cup playoff event. He ended up skipping the Cognizant and the Texas Open, but he added the Houston Open. He skipped the Heritage. Now he's skipping the Memorial, but he is expected to add the Travelers the week after the U.S. Open. And then he's obviously got the RBC Canadian Open on his schedule, right? So maybe this changed when he won the Masters, right? Like maybe he adjusted his schedule after that. One thing some people have been saying online is Rory's cared less about what people are kind of thinking about him recently. He's just kind of doing what he wants at this point. I think he was carrying water for the PGA Tour for such a long period of time, and then nothing kind of transpired with the deal. And now he's just doing what he's want. Like he skipped talking to the media 4 straight days in a row at the Truist, which sparked quite a bit of an outrage online, especially amongst like the journalists who were looking for comments from him. I mean, it's perfectly understandable if he doesn't want to speak, but like 4 straight days is quite a lot for a player of his stature, his caliber. Pretty unusual, to be honest. This is when the driver issue was going on. But yeah, I mean, it's just something to see. He's also playing the Genesis Scottish like the week before the Open. That's on his schedule as well. So he's really going all over the map to play. He's getting around the world and he's being that global player that he wants to be. He's also fulfilling his commitment of playing his minimum number of events needed for the DP World Tour as well, right? So Rory is truly a global player. Is it a big deal that he's skipping the Memorial? I don't know. The field has a lot of loaded guys in it already. It's a loaded field. It's not like they're lacking any star power this week in Ohio.
No. No, they'll be just fine without him.
So.
That's Scotty, right, Joey.
It gets Scotty a better chance to go win the thing. So, look, I'm not complaining. Rory does what he wants. If he's trying to take a step back from, like he – wanted to lead the charge. He kind of wanted to be able to get some drama going at the Masters, and he did it. And so now he's probably just – I don't blame him. I'd probably be the same way. But, yeah, I'm surprised, but it's whatever. I mean, do you. Give Scotty a better chance, like I said. So
He just feels like a different player since he's, quote-unquote, removed himself from the politics of the PGA Tour. It's almost like it's a different person, right? Like, so all that stuff he was saying, you almost have to wonder if it was just because it was the company line, right, at the time when he was leading the charge. Because now you just see so many different aspects of it that he's kind of gone anti what he was saying before. But I get it, right? Like, he was carrying the tour at that time because Tiger was gone and – his voice was the loudest or carried the most weight at that time. So as he's removed himself from the politics of it, he's allowed to be himself, and good for him. More good to him. Like you say, John, like I said too, this is the tournament doesn't necessarily have to have him this week. There are plenty of big names this week. Plenty.
Yeah. Some interesting comments as well. Some interesting stuff from Scottie Scheffler. He was, last week he was asked about the ongoing divide in professional golf. He's asked when are things going to come back together. the reality is nobody really knows. I mean, if you ask the players, they don't seem like they know. They don't seem to have much of an answer when they're asked, and they don't seem very interested in saying much about it. I genuinely think that they don't really have much information on it, to be honest with you. I just think they're not really in the room at this point. It's just so far gone. He did make some comments, though. He went into a little bit more depth than some of the other guys have gone into it recently. He said, "I don't really know. That's for the higher ups to decide. I've said it a few times this year. If you want to figure out what's going to happen in the game of golf, go to the other tour and ask those guys." He said, "I'm still here playing the PGA Tour. We had a tour where we all played together, and the guys that left, it's their responsibility, I think, to bring the tours back together. Go and see where they're playing this week and ask them."
I know Hutch doesn't like that one. Which is pretty gosh. For Scotty to like, Scotty is usually not one to, you know, really speak on anything, let alone this. He's usually kind of stayed back. I mean, he's had some comments before that, you know, they're very dull. This has definitely been his most poignant. I know he caught some flack for it. I get what he's trying to say. His vision of it, I think, is, which obviously he's making the most money on the PGA Tour by a mile, so really he's probably not the right person to ask about it. But I think his vision is that, like, the PGA Tour is like the home of golf. They went and started like a branch. If they want to join again, it's going to be them coming back to us. There is going to be no conjoining in the middle. There's not going to be no United League. Like, it'll be back to the PGA Tour. So I get the sentiment on it, but I was kind of surprised that he, you know, commented on it at all.
Yeah, it's surprising for him to comment about it to that degree. But again, you know, Scottie Scheffler is a true PGA Tour player. Like, he's remained loyal to the PGA Tour this entire time. So, I mean, he's a pretty hardcore tour guy, right? Like, he's truly representing the PGA Tour. He is the number one in the world. I mean, not that the rankings hold as much weight as they used to, but I mean, he is the best player in the game of golf. Him and Rory, right?
Even if Liv was getting ranking points, he would still probably be number one pretty comfortably, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, he's that much better than everybody else right now. So his words matter when he says stuff. And like you say, Joey, he doesn't – that's why I think it shook so much when he said this, because he doesn't say much about this at all. So it was kind of a big deal for him to speak on it. I don't know if he's just tired of being asked about it. I don't know how often he's asked about it. You don't ever hear comments from him about it, but it's got to be, if I was a professional golfer, it's got to be tiring to just have everyone commenting on the divide in the game that you play. Yeah. It's got to be.
That's where I cut Rory some slack at some point. Cause it's like, I know you chose to kind of step up and be the spokesperson and the foreman of it. But like, after a while, dude, like, it's got to get so tired. Like, you don't, especially if you don't know any more than the next guy. Like, I just want to play golf. And Scotty's very much that way. Scotty wants to go play golf and avoid the media. Like, he's a nice guy, but he just doesn't want to get involved in that. He wants to go play golf, go home to his family, rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
Very, very simple guy.
And I think you're right. I don't think they know anything because if you think about it, like the framework agreement, all that happened in the dead of night. Like, they didn't even know that was coming. Nobody knew that was coming. That just shook the world when it happened. So, you know, and then you remember – I read a story about Grayson Murray today talking about how he went off on Jay Monahan at that meeting. It may have been the Delaware meeting where
it was, I believe.
Know, yeah. He went off on him because he made this deal without talking to any of them. It just happened in the dead of night. And, you know, it's, I don't think the players are being kept up to speed on a lot. I don't think they know. And to ask them, and even to some degree, like Scotty's point of go ask those guys who left, they don't know. They're not at the negotiating table. They don't have a clue. They know they can't come back right now, but that's all they know.
One crazy stat here before some news from today or yesterday, but Scheffler's been world number one for a very long time now. I think over 100 and something weeks.
Yeah, it's like 107 or 112 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, so 112 weeks. And I believe Tiger Woods was number one in the world for cumulatively 683 weeks, I believe. Mm-hmm. Which means that Scottie Scheffler needs to be number one in the world for like another 10 years, which goes to show just the length and insane duration that Tiger was the number one player in the world for all those years. Shows like the true domination. But even for Scottie to be holding it right now this long, like getting into this length of time, like over 2 years at world number one, it shows that he's played some very consistent golf. He's been the top player in the game for a long time now. Yeah. You know, it speaks to just how good of a player he's been since he kind of started his run, right? It's just wild to see the stats and the wins that he's been able to put up in his career.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the closest thing that we've seen to that, but then it's just Tiger's just in a different stratosphere, a different universe, right? Like it just shows we'll probably never ever see anything like that again. And that's not a hateful comment towards anybody. It's just a compliment to the greatness of what Tiger was. But absolutely. I'm just a fanboy, so what am I, you know? You don't have to listen to me.
There was a report out of Golf Week's Eamon Lynch. You know, obviously, he takes a very hardline stance against Liv, I find, in his writing. He is obviously well-connected to the tour, I think, so he does get inside knowledge from some of the top docs in Pontevedra. But he said, Liv golfers have been told they won't be getting the signing bonuses they received when they joined the league. I mean, this is talking about the contracts that are up for renewal. He said, DJ's contract is up this year. But I mean, if you guys had to be honest about it, is DJ really going to even re-sign with Liv? Like, we could be at the point where Dustin Johnson is ready to just kind of retire and fade off into the sunset. He seems to be really enjoying his life when he's not playing on Liv, and his performances just haven't been matching the caliber of player that he used to be since he took the money. Brooks and Bryson's contracts are up next year. DJ's also 41, by the way, but Brooks and Bryson's contracts are up next year, and then John Rahm is apparently locked in for the longest term of everyone. Sounded kind of like he still has a few more years to go, maybe out farther to like 2027 or 2028, the way I kind of interpreted it.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that guys are going to be re-signing with Liv, or is it all kind of dependent on where things go with the negotiations? Do you think – Where do you see it going with guys like a Brooks or a Bryson?
I mean, I think for Liv, like, the biggest thing they need to do as far as being able to retain their roster, I guess, would be the biggest pathway would be either figuring out a way to get world ranking points or some defined, clear way to get into every single major championship and not have to do these Monday qualifiers or the U.S. Open qualifying or special exemptions or anything like that. They need to get that figured out before these contracts come up, honestly, or they're going to have to pay them bonuses. I know that they're being told that they're not, but what's to keep those guys there if you're not paying them bonuses and they don't get ranking points leading to entryways into major championships? That's the biggest thing, right? Like, they need to get that resolved before any of these contracts expire. DJ, maybe not a huge deal for them because he's not, like, say, you know, we saw him in his YouTube video with Grant and Phil and all that, where he basically said, you know, if I'm still playing golf in 10 years, something has gone horribly wrong. I don't think it matters what tour he's on. He's always going to wind down. I don't even know if he'll be one of those guys that comes back and plays a handful of times a year. I don't even know if he'll do that. No, like, he just seems happier to be retired and do whatever he's doing and just be a recreational golfer. Mm-hmm. But Brooks and Bryson, like, losing those guys would be, particularly Bryson.
Right? Yeah.
Because he's the biggest, he's the most popular name in golf. right now. So that's somebody that is an absolute must keep for Liv. They got to figure that out.
And he's honestly, you think about someone that's the least, that needs Liv the least, it's Bryson by a mile. Like Bryson could go retire off his Liv earnings and just do fun YouTube challenges while, if he could find a way to just maintain ability to go play in majors and that's all he had to do and then just make YouTube videos all day, he would do that in a heartbeat, my guess. So
yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, they probably have to shift their focus if they need to move around some funds just to be able to prioritize the top guys more. You know, you've had some time to reevaluate kind of who's performed on the Liv tournaments and who's kind of pulling in any sort of attention. Drop those guys and really focus on that solid crew. Maybe younger guys, try to snag some guys that are on the come up just to get some more talent. You know, invest in the YouTube side of things. Like if that's where the media is leaning, like, but they got to do something, because I can tell you, like, some of those guys are going to walk even if they don't know where they're going, if the money's not there.
And I saw somebody had called it, like, saying that it wasn't a signing bonus, that it was a defection bonus. Those guys, they didn't defect. They didn't quit the PGA Tour. Like, they signed to play for Liv, and the PGA Tour banned them or suspended them or whatever. So I don't see that. Like, obviously, they took the bag and they went and did what they did. That's fine. I mean, I respect the hell out of the guys that said they did it for the money, Brooks being one of them. Like, I get that. That's fine. I just think that for Liv to continue to exist, they're going to have to figure out a way to keep Bryson in particular, because they're going to have to build their future around him if they're going to continue being a separate entity. He's got to be the face. Has to be.
Yeah. He definitely does have to be the face of it for sure. He was doing some promotional work at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I think it was. There's the Liv tournament coming up there, I guess, later this year. So he's doing some promo work at the track. He hit a ball down the track, and then he also drove one of the cars around the track too. Shifting gears a little bit, I don't know if you guys saw the video. The eighth hole on Oakmont, par three, will play over 290 yards. We asked people if they would make par or better. Comments were pretty wild. I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on a par three that's this long? Like, Oakmont went through a restoration, right? It typically used to play 250 yards, but it was extended to 290 yards to test out U.S. Open competitors. So is this just like a great test for a U.S. Open? Or is this unreasonable for the players? What do you guys think?
I love it. It's carnage. It's good. I mean, these are tour guys. So like, honestly, that's a safe distance for like a driver for most of these guys, even if they have to saw it off a little bit. Like Scotty, for example, like I'm, you know, obviously there's a miss left and right, but I mean, you got some runway there. So, I mean, you can start at the front of the green and work it up. Like,
yeah,
I think it provides a little bit of a challenge. It's better than like, I'd rather that than like some weird medium, like 240 yard distance, like we saw this week. Like if you're going to do it, do it.
Yeah. At any other tournament besides the US Open, I'd probably have a small issue with it. But it's the U.S. Open, right? Like, so this is like what we've talked about on the last couple of shows, where we've talked about, you know, maybe the green speed being up at 15 and the rough being whatever, 5 inches thick or whatever it's supposed to be. Like, carnage is what we're looking for. Carnage is what we love at U.S. Open. I just watched 2 days ago, I watched the 2007 U.S. Open film, like, in didn't realize that the winning score was 5 over par that week with Angel Cabrera. And coming down the stretch, like, so basically that film was just from like the 11th hole of the last group on. Coming down the stretch, like, most of the guys that were near the lead were at 7, 8, some even 9 over. So like, that's what I'm looking for in a US Open, right? Like, that's good. It's going to be great. And if you need to have a 300 yard par three or whatever it's going to end up playing, like, by all means, go for it. Like you say, Joey, there's a big runway. So, you know, and they even said on that film, like, it's, you've got the runway, you put it up there, you're really testing their short games. You're not thinking that they're going to get up close to the hole. There's not going to be many birdies made this week on that hole. And that's fine. That's exactly what we want from a US Open. I cannot wait for it. Love it.
I want it to average like 3.5. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I'm excited too. Michael Kim posted on X a little bit ago. He said, "I've already hit driver on a par three at the U.S. Open. And I will not be afraid to do it again."
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's awesome as well. I think it's cool to see the players get tested like that. You know, the wind is whipping as well. It'll be even more interesting and fun. There was a report today from Parlay Safari on X. They said a PGA Tour player was at Oakmont today, not to be named, but he's top 20 in odds this week at the Memorial. Said he's never seen rough like this for an event in his entire career. Strap in. So we'll see. I mean,
you do.
It's been it's been raining a lot. They haven't cut the rough yet, probably. But I mean, if reports are to be believed, officials reportedly telling caddies and whatnot, insider info, that greens are going to be running like, I think, what was it, 15?
15 is what you thought.
It's going to be 6 plus inches. So we'll see if that comes to fruition.
I can't wait. I hope so. I cannot wait. This is going to be exciting.
We usually get the ball drop videos, and then it just doesn't seem to provide as much carnage as the lone Twitter video. But if this week in 2 weeks, if that can prove, you know, I would love that.
Oh my God, I can't wait. I'm so excited. This is going to be great.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the U.S. Open. It's one of the best majors. I mean, it's still probably third in my top four rankings. But
come on.
I like the U.S. Open.
It's definitely top four though, right? Like it's a top four major for you.
Yeah, it's a top four for sure, and it's a top three in my book. I just like the history of the U.S. Open, for one. A lot of history, and then the carnage that it provides is also amazing. Yeah. And there's some great, great classic venues too. So
what did you rank I'm looking last? Forward I don't to remember.
PGA last.
Yeah.
He did Masters Open. So
PGA ended up being a good finish this year. Finished all right. Angel Cabrera, fellas, he's won his second straight senior major. So back-to-back senior major wins, first two of his career within 6 days. He first won the Regents Traditions, I believe, was the first one. And then he won the senior PGA Championship, which was actually held at Congressional up in D.C. He won by a shot over Padraig Harrington and Thomas Bjorn. So sometimes if you just look at these leaderboards on the Champions Tour and you see the names up there, it just like
gives you 2007.
Nostalgia. Yeah, it's just turning back the clock. Some of the guys, Padraig was deep in the hunt on Sunday. He had a great chance. He was leading at one point. But Cabrera entered Sunday leading or tied for the lead going in. So no surprise that Cabrera has risen to the occasion in these big senior major events. But what a comeback after, I mean, this guy was in jail, obviously, for 3 years. We've talked about it pretty extensively on here. But he's really finding his form on the senior tour.
Literally 2007, because he won the U.S. Open that year, and I think Patty won the PGA that year. So it was literally like 2007. Now, Angel, first off, two majors in 2 weeks is a crazy concept, but that's here nor there, right? But on hell, like that's the blueprint of what your boy Scotty can be looking forward to after life after prison up there. So maybe that's something that he could be aiming for, but that's great for him. It's crazy how he found his game so quickly after serving time, though.
Joey, it wasn't just two wins, actually. He had a non-major win as well. So that's three wins in five starts, which is wild.
That's absurd.
It's like Phil Mickelson level Pete senior tour stuff. Like, remember when he first went to the senior tour and was winning like every event he played before he went to live?
He won like 3 weeks in a row, I want to say, right? It was like kind of a torrid start. Co-owner Brent says that Angel Cabrera maybe had a simulator in his cell.
That's the key right there.
I
think he did.
That would be
I know these prisons are getting kind of, they're cleaning them up.
Yeah, they're getting fancy, right? You've seen Narcos, right? Like maybe he's got like the Escobar like hookup. He's just in a mansion that's quote unquote a prison or whatever. That'd have been wild. But yeah, I mean, hey, good for him. I guess good for the senior tour because they're getting a lot of, they're being talked about a lot.
He might have just been. He might have been chipping around in the yard. Maybe I haven't looked at his strokes gain, but maybe he's just a monster, like 50 yards and in. Just been putting to different like sides of the yard. Yeah,
the yard. Like he's not playing basketball with the boys. He's chipping.
He's dialing. Although I can't imagine putts in the corner.
I can't imagine that they would give somebody though like a golf club because that could be used as a.
The last sporting. Anything besides like
they might give somebody a baseball bat before that.
Yeah, 4-4.
Right, like, come on.
Tee up the memorial quickly here before we head out, fellas. Loaded field this week. Top 50 in the 2024 FedEx Cup standings are playing. Also, sponsors exemptions went out. Ricky Fowler, Matt Kuchar, Brant Snedeker, Jordan Spieth. So. For Spieth and Fowler, I believe this is their fifth exemption of the year. They both lead the PGA Tour in exemptions given. Overall, I mean, not a huge surprise, right? These are two guys that can move the needle ratings-wise. I mean, it's ultimately up to the sponsors. They're the ones, you know, writing the check. But what are you guys' thoughts on Fowler and Spieth getting another sponsor's exemption? Are you guys in agreement with it? Personally, I think that it's perfectly understandable and reasonable as to why they're two of the top guys that are picked. You just never know when those guys could catch fire and, you know, win one. Like Ricky won the Rocket Mortgage a year or two ago, didn't he not?
Yeah. I mean, I was like about saying.
You go ahead, Joey.
Okay. I mean, these are two guys that could come out literally, especially at this course. And when everyone else is struggling, especially with those strokes like off the tee, these are kind of guys that could see a top 10, let alone win. So, I mean, it's not like if you want to look at it as like kicking a spot from somebody else, that's one thing. But I mean, they're two players that could be in contention easily with a coin flip. So,
yeah, this isn't inviting a YouTuber, right? Like this is a legitimate, you're not inviting a YouTuber and you're not inviting like some 65-year-old guy who just has a big name, right? Like these are two guys who legitimately on any given week could win. Add in the fact that they're two of the most popular players on tour, particularly with the kids. So I don't see a big deal in this at all. And anybody that really complains about it is there's so many other things to worry about in the world. Why are you worried about them inviting two of the most popular players who legitimately could win? Even if it's not likely, but they could win, you shouldn't be worried about that. This is good for the tour. And guess what? It's a sponsor's exemption. The sponsor gets to pick. They set these aside every tournament. So, again, what are we complaining about?
Yeah, I haven't seen many complaints about it, to be honest with you. I mean, a few people like to pick a bone about it. But this week, Scheffler, Morikawa, Sahith Theegala is playing this week. After withdrawing from he withdrew from the PGA, right, with a neck issue.
And so, the boys were a little concerned about that going forward, but it seems like he's okay right now. I guess there's still time to WD though if he gets there and it's not good.
Who else we got? Xander's playing, Adam Scott, Wyndham Clark. Speaking of Wyndham Clark, he had that violent driver outburst at the PGA Championship. I'm sure you guys saw it. Swung for the fences, literally. Swung for some signage. The marshal that was standing over there said that he was scared for his life. I mean, it probably is scary if like a golf club is coming at you at that speed. But what was most interesting about the entire ordeal, probably, thankfully no one was hurt or anything like that. Wyndham came out with his apology statement the next day. No surprise, because the comments on X were brutal for him. But the sign that he actually broke was a T-Mobile signage, and he's actually a T-Mobile ambassador. So
it's on his hat.
The company actually waited a few days to like formally respond to it. They kind of let the dust settle on it. But then they actually put out a tweet. I'm just pulling it up here. They said, you've got our support, Wyndham. And the good news is that on our 5G network is ready for almost anything, even if our signs aren't. So they essentially turned this entire negative thing into a marketing thing for them.
Yeah.
Turned a negative PR thing into a positive marketing message regarding their cell service and quality of the network. Surprising, to be honest. I didn't see that one coming. I even thought maybe that like he could be dropped as a sponsor, like as an ambassador for something like this. Like he literally wears a T-Mobile hat and he's chucking his driver into their sign. Like not the best look, obviously, right, for him, but shit happens, I guess, eh, Joey?
Yeah, like at the end of the day, dude, like to be honest, I kind of wish he didn't apologize. If it were me and I were on the tour, like I would double down anytime I did something like that. Like just, I was pissed. There was a sign behind me. Like I didn't kill anybody. I didn't hit anybody. I'm sure the marshal got scared. They're all like 70. I think like the sound of the ball being hit scares them anyway.
Killed the marshal two different ways.
And also if this wasn't Wyndham Clark, I don't even know, throw somebody random out there, it'd probably be different, but it's nice to see that they kind of leaned into it. I don't think it's that serious at the end of the day. It's like good marketing opportunity, PR spin. I'm sure they could kind of run with it if they wanted to. So we'll get a commercial probably in a month of him just absolutely spiking a driver into a T-Mobile sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anytime they're talking about you, it's a good thing, right? Like,
yeah, no such thing as bad PR.
I'm with you. I think, I don't know if I'd double down every time I did something like that, but T-Mobile clearly doubled down, which is great. I mean, good for them.
Yeah, it was a good look for them to just eat it.
Well, fellas, we've covered quite a bit of ground in this episode in a pretty short period of time. We're under an hour, but I think this is probably a good spot to wrap it. Looking forward to the memorial this week. Signature event should be exciting to watch over the weekend. And then looking ahead, obviously, to the U.S. Open at Oakmont, it's going to be an awesome, awesome tournament. But before the U.S. Open, we've got the RBC Canadian Open up in Canada, TPC Toronto, U.S. Women's Open this week as well. So we'll keep an eye on that. There's always usually some drama at the U.S. Women's Open, actually, in the later stages of the tournament. So keep an eye on that on Sunday. But apart from that, I hope you guys have a good week here. And we will be back next Monday to recap it all.
Before we go, who are you picking for Memorial to win? I'm rocking with Sepp Straka. Just give me that.
Oh, I like that.
Book it.
I like it. Unbiased. Also, I mean, yeah. But like unbiasedly, like I said, I see Cantlay working in there, Morikawa. They've all played there. You know, Danny McCarthy should be in the field. I think he was in a playoff 2 years ago when Victor Hovland won. He's also someone that could play pretty well. So those are all guys to keep an eye out for. Maybe Ludwig. I don't know.
And Scotty's defending this week, right? He won last year.
Correct. Yep. So I mean, obviously he'll be probably like a plus 330 favorite, maybe a little better than that, but
I think it was 280.
This is absurd. Rory backing out really helped that.
You know, there's a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys in the field this week. I don't know who to pick, honestly. Shane Lowry's been close this year on several occasions. He's been close this year on several occasions, but I'm not sure if this course is a fit for him or not.
Which is a shame because he feels like a guy who would be a good representative of winning Jack's tournament. Like he feels like that kind of guy. So that's a shame. But
instead, we'll, it's been like six or seven years since he's won a solo PGA Tour event. Right? He won the Zurich
with Rory.
With Rory.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see who comes out on top this week. Looking forward to catching the end of the U.S. Women's Open as well. Like I said, usually some good drama. So we will be back next Monday to recap those two events and look ahead at whatever else makes news this week. As always, huge thanks to all you guys for watching. tuning in live on X. X and YouTube aren't the only place where you can watch this show. If you want to listen to it after the fact, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, and we're on Amazon Music within a few hours after the show concludes. So if you're in your drive into work tomorrow or drive home, you can catch this episode when you're in your car. If you'd leave us a rating on Apple and all these other platforms, we really appreciate that. It helps us grow. Huge thanks, guys, for watching. As always, we'll catch you on the next episode. My name is John. I've been joined tonight by Hutch Bennett and Joey from Scheffler Fans. We're signing off. Thanks for watching.